Our planet is circling, as always, for millennia. It's good for us to contemplate what is going on outside, but really we only get a handle on it by contemplating what is going on inside, because our inner universe is always in its particular predicament. And what it's possible for us to realize is how the inner outlook completely affects the external and how we receive what's going on around us. So there's a Chan master who said, disengage from the conditioned disturbance and abide in stillness and silence, free from emotional dust. To take care of the mind is really to listen to the Dhamma, not just to listen with half an ear. It's not like a TV program. It's not entertainment. It's to study ourselves and to realize, why am I doing what I'm doing? And what do I really worship? So these are important questions for us to ask. What do you worship? Do you worship stillness and silence? Or do you worship watching a Zoom session, watching anything, but not really watching the mind? And the mind that is bifurcated with worldly activity, but listen to a Dhamma talk at the same time, we're not really listening, and that's how we've spent our lives. Not really listening. How many decades has it been since we knew, have been told repeatedly to give up certain kinds of food for the betterment of our health, or to give up using coal for the benefit of the climate, for the benefit of the earth? And because we haven't been listening, this is the state we're in now. It's because of our own inattentiveness. If we want to learn how to take care of the mind, we have to listen. We have to stop all our busyness and really listen. What is the cry within the heart? Doesn't the heart want us to stop and pay attention? You cannot study greed, desire, or fear, anxiety, without stopping and being still enough to be able to see what that is. What is it that moves us to be occupied all the time? We're busier than the world has ever been. Frantic. Fill up every minute with something so we don't have to listen to the truth pounding on the door of our hearts to get in. And like the Chan master said, disengage from the conditioned disturbance of the world and abide in the silence and stillness. But the mind isn't still, so how can we abide in it? Instead, we abide in busyness and we carry that frenetic energy from birth to the grave, and we die in fear. So it's important for us to know what we really worship, because if we don't bow down to silence, we'll never hear it. The silence within us is like thunder. We don't hear it. We're deaf. we're blind. Mute. We are. We're muted. You're all muted. But that's not the muting that we should be worried about. The muting that we need to be worried about, concerned about, and undo is the muting of the truth that begs us to stop and listen, because it is so unlike the conditioned world, we will never find it in worldly activity. But once we touch the shore of truth in the heart, in one breath we can touch it, then that truth will spread throughout everything in our lives in such a way that we can live freely, joyfully, caringly, wisely, without fear, without ill will, without hatred, without violence, even in the middle of fear, ill will, hatred, and violence. It is doable, but we have to give ourselves to the practice of undoing our freneticism, our agitation, our distraction, and honing our attention in one direction. See how splintered our attention is. We offer this opportunity to share in a time where we focus and give up our other activities. So it's important to really genuinely, authentically give them up, even if we have a lot of work to do. Doesn't matter. We're not doing this work, and this is what we need to do, to really listen. We're full of emotional dust, and the Buddha talked about how dusty our vision is. And the very first thing we have to do is see. But how can we see if we're not willing to look? Because we're so busy looking in the wrong way. I have tried in my life to worship. First, I worshiped my teachers, but I did really understand before I even found my teachers that there was something that life was not offering me. And I did some radical things to find those teachers so that I could learn how to see. And learning how to see is a lifetime project. I traveled far. I took a lot of risks. I managed to find some truly amazing, very, very superlative, exalted teachers, not to mention the Buddha. It was because early on I had this photograph of a Buddha, not a photograph, a painting, a facsimile photo of the Buddha. And I kept it in my room in a high place. Nobody taught me how to do that. But I remember when I was 5 years old, looking out the window of my bedroom and talking to the sky and saying, God, if you're there, I want to see you. Show yourself to me. And nothing happened. So then I got very discouraged and I thought, there's no such thing. But later, I began to intuit that this godliness, this godness, is not something that I could see with my eyes. I had to see it in a different way. And so we are so demanding of the truth. We want things to be made plain to us, or we're not going to believe it. We're not going to believe in that unconditional truth, that sublime reality. But we have to, at some point, trust that the seeing we have to learn is not with the optic nerve, but it's an inner seeing with the heart. And we learn that, and then we learn how to trust that. And then when we trust enough, that trust becomes a way of worshiping what we trust more than anything. And it's the quality of unconditional love. What is unconditional love? What do you worship? What do you want from your life? Do you want freedom from suffering? And the world always offers freedom as having what you want, or having time to do what you want. We heard today from someone who just retired and is so happy to have time to do what she wants. But is doing what we want really going to give us freedom? And the world keeps selling us that. And we try everything. We try everything in the conditioned world to get what we want, but it doesn't give us freedom. And here in the monastery, we have a lot of constraints and restraints. So it's like being in jail. If you told somebody who was in jail that you sleep on the floor, you sleep on a mat, and you don't eat afternoon, you don't get dinner, and you can't just leave the monastery when you want, you have to get permission, or you have to get somebody to come and take you somewhere because you can't drive, you don't have any money, so you can't go shopping. And then if they heard that, they would say, well, that's what it's like being in jail. But actually, we don't want to leave. Do we want to leave? Because there's so much to be gained. I notice even when we're cleaning, we have to clean every day. We have to clean the body, clean the room, clean our clothes, clean the sink, clean the toilet, clean the yard, the porch, clean the paths. There's a lot of cleaning. But the cleaning is not a problem. It's always what's in the mind. And what I see over and over again is that when the heart is not holding emotional dust, the cleaning is such a joyful activity. It's like you get right into it. And then there's this feeling that you want it to be so clean that if the Buddha himself were to walk in, it would be beautiful. This would be ready for that kind of arrival. But in fact, this Buddha mind, or this awareness of the goodness in the heart, is always there. It's always present. So we don't have to wait for a kind of a figure of great dharmic authority to arrive to appreciate our cleaning. We ourselves feel the joy of the love that comes from making things beautiful for the community, for each other, for the world. Because it's a temple, it's a place of service, of refuge, of sanctuary. We don't do it because we're going to have a party or we're going to enjoy a big feast, but just for its own sake, that everything we do is done with care. And the taking care on the outside with a heart that has joy in it and is not full of the dust of the world and the dust of our conditioning that is not wound up in fears and anxieties about the future or the past, then whatever we receive, there's gratitude. Whoever we live with, we practice kindness. We cultivate these qualities, and then there isn't like, I have to get rid of suffering. But by developing wholesomeness in the mind and cleaning, taking care of the mind moment by moment, the suffering falls away. The terrorists could walk in, and we would want to say, would you like a cup of tea? That would be hard to do, but we're working towards having that kind of unconditional compassion. So we're not trying to get rid of anything. And then by cultivating the wholesome, the unwholesome doesn't have a chance. The mind becomes so bright that darkness does not even tiptoe in there. Oh yeah, we might have moments when we feel discouraged or tired, exhausted or sick. But that's not a problem because we know how to cultivate the garden. If the flowers are drooping, we know how to water them so they sit up again. And so we know how to care for the mind so that we can brighten it up and clear away the dust. And that's why the Buddha taught this Dhamma. For those who have little dust in their eyes, all we have to notice is how much dust is there in the heart. And we get busy dusting. But actually, we're dusting our own minds. So if you hear sounds that are pleasing, then the mind becomes attached to those sounds. So the problem of our suffering is not that there is pleasant and unpleasant experience, but it's only that we have preferences about getting only what is pleasant and avoiding what is painful. Behind the sound, there is the sound of silence. The silence is always there. It's always present. And if we develop enough awareness of that, that's the mind that is equanimous. That quality of equanimity can be brought forth towards sound itself by being aware of hearing and using the media of hearing noise as just plain hearing. In the hearing, there is only the heard. In the seeing, there's only the seen. There is no pleasant or unpleasant. That's a transcendent moment. It's not a suffering moment. The suffering comes when we become so attached to one way that we cannot bear any other condition. The mind that is truly still is silent. Distraction involves movement. Distraction is not silent. And in distraction, there is desire, because the distracted mind wants what is outside of itself or within itself, like it might want some pleasant experience in the body. Even wanting a beautiful mind state is still not a beautiful mind state because there's desire in it. But when the mind has let go of the world, including the world in the mind, because we bring the world into the mind, but when we're only knowing the purity of the mind, then we have let go the conditioned world and the disturbances of the conditioned world. That is true silence. When the mind is abiding in that silence, then we can see. That is the beginning of discernment. The mind that is empty of all conditioned knowing and is only resting in knowing the brilliance, the internal, the interior, the most inward purity of itself, then that mind is giving itself to the unconditioned, seeing intuitively with intuitive insight into our own true nature. And this is the bodhicitta, the Buddha mind. True love, not artificial love, not superficial lovingness. How to love even beings that are unkind. But that is the epitome of nonviolence. So to be able to embody those kind of qualities, we need a sharp discernment. Because with the faculty of wisdom developing, it only comes to fruition if we develop that depth of compassion. We have to develop compassion for each other, but for ourselves too. After all, discernment is wisely seeing, wisely hearing, wisely tasting, wisely speaking, wisely acting, wisely thinking. So if there are poisonous thoughts in the mind, we know how to evacuate them. Not to dwell in anger. How many moments of the day do we spend dwelling in resentment, in anger, in regret? We must turn the mind to that which supports the truth in us moment by moment.